Antiques Roadshow is a big hit for public TV. PBS runs the show, in which appraisers travel from town to town and invite people to bring in their antiques, or what they assume are antiques, to be appraised. Obviously, the key to this operation is not the TV camera, it sure helps, but the appraiser. The knowledge of that person figures out the value of the item brought in by the hopeful owner. And today's guest is one of those appraisers. Peter Papp is the rugs and textiles guy. He'll tell you if the rug is valuable enough to go in a place of honor, or if it's better put in your laundry room or mud room or something like that. Peter Papp, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Peter, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Take us back in time, if you would. You have an Oregon connection from many years ago, I understand.
Well, actually, I do. I was in my late teens, and I had gone to an alternative school in Massachusetts, and one of the faculty there moved to Five Rivers, which is outside of, it's about 45 minutes northwest of Eugene, near Waldport on the coast, and he started a commune, and I actually spent a couple of years on that commune before heading back east.
And was at that point you got into the rug business?
It was. I was living in Boston, and I was married and had a child on the way, and I had a choice of jobs on the particular day that I went to the employment agency, and my choice was either packing meat in the south end of Boston or being a stock boy in an Oriental rug store.
I understand that at the time you were vegetarian, so the meat packing thing didn't necessarily appeal.
It didn't appeal, I have to say.
Uh-huh. But, I mean, how much enthusiasm did you approach the rug business with when you first got into it? I mean, was it something you really, I mean, did you have any idea it might turn into a lifelong pursuit?
I didn't, but I was so ambitious having mouths to feed that I feel in retrospect that I probably would have embraced any business I had gone into at that point. And I was lucky that it was rugs because this was an Oriental rug dealership that had been in business since 1926. It was started by an Armenian who had escaped the genocide with Turkey, and he'd come to this country, and so as a result of that, his son was my boss, and they had rugs that were left over from his father's tenure, so I got a little bit of a inkling into what antique rugs were, and they captivated my interest.
You know, I noticed that we can still get away with calling rugs Oriental. It stopped with people several years ago, but they are still referred to as Oriental rugs?
They're still referred to as Oriental rugs because there was a fascination with the Orient, and the Orient did not necessarily mean China. It was very much about the Middle East and the Orient Express, and there was a whole movement of what we call Orientalism in the late 19th century, where you have great paintings that depicted scenes in bazaars and souks that had rugs draped in various stalls. So there's not the stigma with that reference.
It seems, Peter, like there's just so much to learn here. I mean, and you've been in the business for 40-some-odd years now, is it?
Just about 40 years.
That it's still like a constant learning process because there's so many different rugs made in so many different tribal and religious and national traditions. Do you feel like you really know what you're doing now, or is there still more for you to learn?
Well, you never stop learning, and that's really what's wonderful about the business is that it's an ongoing education, not just in rugs, but in the history of the world. And I've learned so much since my formal education stopped at high school. I've learned a tremendous amount through the business.
And so what are some of the features? And I mean, when people bring rugs in to you, I mean, what are some of the first things that you're going to look at? I mean, there must be a few things that instantly jump out from any rug to begin the process of A or B, this or that, good or not.
Well, absolutely. And just to give you a little bit of a background, the majority of rugs that are in this country that are handmade Oriental rugs are going to be pieces that were woven between, let's say, 1850 and the present day. And what we're really looking for are rugs that are from that 1850 to 1900 realm, and those are getting fewer and fewer and harder to find. And the majority of those rugs of that age came out into the marketplace, I would say, in the 60s and 70s when there was a generational turnover. In other words, if a lot of the best antique rugs were purchased in the late 19th and early 20th century, those worked their way through families, and they went through two or three generations, and some were kept and some were sold. And the majority of them tended to be sold and not kept in families. So when you have rugs that surface today, they tend to be made after World War II, and they don't have the same level of interest because the rug industry had gotten so commercial at that point. They didn't have real authentic tribal rugs as much. They were using synthetic dyes as opposed to natural dyes. The whole process had been so commercialized that there isn't a lot of aesthetic beauty to the rugs that were made after the war. And so as a result, the first thing we're looking for are things that are old enough to have that kind of dynamic quality that would reflect the human component in the weaving of the rug and pieces that are less commercial.
There's really a work of a person in there then, is what you're talking about.
Yes, a lot of the rugs are just made by one woman. They were majority of the weavers were women.
Okay, let's pick it up there on the other side of a break. We're talking to Peter Papp from Antiques Roadshow about rugs and about the operation of the roadshow itself. Back on the Jefferson Exchange with Peter and your phone calls on the Jefferson Exchange in 1 minute. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Today we're talking to one of the appraisers from the hit PBS series Antiques Roadshow. Peter Papp is the rugs and textiles guy. He knows a whole lot about rugs from nearly 40 years in the business and is the person that the rugs go to on the show. We're talking about the workings of the show and the process of appraising rugs. You can join us here on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 anywhere in our listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782 by email jx@jeffnet.org. We're talking about some of the antique rugs that you said were basically from 1850 to 1900 are the most valuable ones. But this is a fascinating thing you had just said was that they're generally made by one woman?
Well, the small rugs were generally the size of a rug determines how many weavers there were. And so as a rule, if a rug is, let's say, between 3x5 and 5x7, more than likely it was made by one weaver. When you get into the large rugs that were probably made in a workshop setting, then you would have multiple weavers sitting side by side. If you think about women sitting shoulder width apart, if you had a rug that was 9x12, there might have been three or four women sitting side by side weaving that rug. But the tribal and village rugs, which are the most collectible, were cottage industry pieces, and they were either made in a tent or an individual home. To be resold, and it would have been an individual work of art.
Let us take a call. We have Dennis and Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking to Peter Papp about rugs and the Antiques Roadshow.
Okay, I have two questions. First is a rug question. I have a rug that I inherited from my grandmother that when her and my grandfather were homesteading in New Mexico in the early 1900s, she traded from a Navajo lady, and I'm wondering who I could call or get a hold of that could actually give me a reasonable expectation of the value of the rug. And my second question is, I've watched your show a lot for a long time, and one of the things that I've always thought is that the things are sort of appraised that more than their true value really is, and I wondered if maybe you kind of inflate values to make it sound better for the person that's sitting there.
Well, let me answer both questions. First of all, the PBS, if you go to pbs.org and go to the Antiques Roadshow segment of that website, they have a whole roster of appraisers in all the various fields. And for your Navajo rug, you can simply go to the appraisers that specialize in Native American art or tribal art and pick out one of those appraisers and email them images of your rug, and you'll most certainly get a response with their idea of what the value might be. So that's an excellent resource for anyone who has something they're trying to find out about. They'll find that the appraisers are quite generous with their time in giving a quick response as to whether something has good value or not.
Wow, that's a great service.
Yes, and in terms of the other question regarding values, there are different types of appraisers on the roadshow. There are appraisers that are independent business people that have their own businesses, and then there are appraisers that are representatives from auction galleries. And there are two types of values that you tend to get when you watch an appraisal on the roadshow. You'll get from an independent dealer, you'll get what we call an insurance value or a replacement value, which is different than what we call fair market value. So if you have an item and you bring it into us and say, how much would I have to pay to replace this item, that's going to be one value that we give to you. If you say, how much could I sell it for, that's what we call fair market value, and that oftentimes is 50% of the replacement value. So what you might be thinking in terms of is the fact that if you had an item that you had to sell and you know you can get X amount of dollars for it, and you're surprised when an appraiser on the roadshow says that it's worth double that, it's very important to listen to the context of the value. And this is something they drum into us before we tape every show. They say, make sure you give a context. And so you're going to hear the appraiser say, if this were in a retail setting or if this were in a gallery, it would be valued at X. And then you're going to have other appraisers that are going to say, if this was at auction, it would bring Y. And so this might be the disparity that you're sensing when you're watching the show.
How long, Peter, do you get to look at a rug before the cameras start recording? I'm curious to know how much time you get to spend with a rug, and for that matter, even without the time that you get prior to the taping, how quickly you can size up a rug?
Well, I can size up a rug very quickly. I'm in a bit of a luxurious position because not nearly as many rugs come into the roadshow as do, let's say, paintings. The poor painting experts have a line that goes out the door all day long. There's 5,000 people that come through the convention center on a given day, and there are four painting experts at the table that are busy all the time. Whereas with me, the rugs are somewhat intermittent, so I don't have to rush through to get to the next rug.
And you're the one rug guy.
I'm the one rug guy. Yeah, they don't need more than one. So when someone brings something in, what's interesting is that if we want an appraisal to be good on television, it has to be fresh. And so you don't want to do the appraisal before you go on TV, so you quickly size up a rug, and if it looks like it has all of the hallmarks for a good appraisal, you ask the owner if they would have time to wait around to talk to the producer so that the producer could evaluate whether the rug would be suitable to tape, and you try not to give them any information, and you just ask them how much they know about the rug, and because you don't want to have a guest that knows everything about the rug, because then it's not a learning experience. So there are a lot of different factors. But once you size up a rug as being an option, you ask the owner to sit behind the wall, essentially, and wait for the producer, and that can take half an hour or 45 minutes just for the producer to come over. And over that time, you know, I can hang on to the rug and study it a little bit and gather my thoughts, because the producer is going to want to know from me what I think of the rug and what I think the value is and the value relative to what the owner thinks it is. So then the producer comes over and speaks to the owner, and they have to ascertain, A, it's very important that the person who has the object is the actual owner, because it can't be taped otherwise. And then B, they want to make sure that the person hasn't done all their research online, so that the, you know, you see some appraisals on the roadshow where it's sort of not that exciting because the person already knows everything, and we're trying to get away from those types of appraisals. So there's ample time to study something before the owner goes off to the green room to wait for the actual taping.
It's interesting, though. I find myself smiling as you're describing this process, though, because it's similar to something we do, which is to not over pre-interview people, where you want to make sure that the revelations are made in the moment, the broadcast moment, rather than having somebody yak your head off on the phone, and then when you get them on the air, they go, yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay.
You don't want an appraisal to be a monologue. The best appraisals are the ones that have a give and take between the appraiser and the owner, and it's being driven by the owner's questions.
Peter Papp is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He is the rugs and textiles appraiser on Antiques Roadshow, the big hit show on PBS. You can hear about the workings of the Antiques Roadshow behind the scenes. You just heard a bit about that and about rugs more specifically. And we'll take your questions and comments here on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. I was taking a look at some of the appraisals from the show available online yesterday, and there's one in particular where a fellow mentions that he was offered $10,000 for a rug, and you played your cards very close to the vest and said, and you didn't take that offer. It was just interesting to watch that process where you were trying not to give away too much early in the appraisal.
Well, the greatest example of that, and I should mention that all of my appraisals are archived, and it's quite easy to get to them. If you go to the PBS website and go to Antiques Roadshow and just enter my name, you can watch any of my appraisals. But my favorite one is one of a trapping that was woven in Turkmenistan over 200 years ago. And it's called an osmalik, and it was woven by the Yomut tribe. And these were weavings that would have hung on the side of a camel during a wedding procession. And they were dowry pieces, so they were made by the bride and the bride's family. And this particular piece came in on a little radio flyer wagon that the owner dragged in that had a pile of rugs on it, and this piece was on the top. And when I saw it, I tried to hide my excitement because it was a real rare item. It's one of only 10 in the world that we know about in that particular design. And she had been in San Diego. This was the San Diego segment, and she'd been driving around the suburbs looking for furniture for her daughter. And there was a couch out on the sidewalk that was said free. And they said, oh, well, that's a perfect couch. We're going to take it. Why don't we knock on the door? And they knocked on the door, and the young man answered, and he was cleaning out his grandfather's estate. And he said, well, you're more than welcome to the couch. And he said, is there anything else you need? And they mentioned, you know, lamps and chairs and things like that. And he says, well, listen, there's a dumpster over in the driveway. Help yourself to anything in the dumpster. And so they went over to the dumpster, and there were five or six rugs, and they just put them in plastic bags and took them home and didn't do anything for a couple of years until the roadshow came to town. And so when they were deciding what to bring to the roadshow, they said, well, why don't we bring these rugs? Now, in advance of here's the interesting part. In advance of doing this, they did a little bit of research on the internet, and they found a very similar piece that had sold at auction in Germany for over $100,000.
Wow.
And so it was a tricky situation for me because she said, now, I'm sure that this isn't the same thing, but we did find something that looked just like it that sold in Germany for $100,000. So my job at that point was, how do I suppress the information that they have the real thing as well so that it can be a good appraisal on TV and she's going to get a nice surprise when I give her the value? And so we went through the process of her talking to the producer, and I convinced the producer that even though they'd found this thing on the internet, I'm pretty sure I could keep them in doubt until the critical moment. So I went through the appraisal, and we went over all the various points of the piece, and I tried to point up the differences between this piece and the piece that they saw online and just keep everything in doubt and suspense. And then at the very end, I said, but you do happen to have the real thing, and it's worth between $150,000 and $175,000, or it might have been $125,000 and $150,000. And I got a great reaction of my daughter's medical school tuition. So it was a real successful appraisal.
But you know, this it's interesting because there must be a certain level of excitement you feel as a person who knows and cares about rugs, and yet you have to keep the poker face at the same time.
Absolutely. I mean, it was a once-in-a-lifetime roadshow experience. I mean, there have been much more valuable things appraised on the roadshow, and, you know, I had a friend who appraised the iconic first phase Chiefs blanket for $500,000 that ended up being, you know, played over and over again. But in terms of rugs, you're not going to see many rugs come in that are going to be in that price range. An interesting follow-up to the story is that she called me the following Monday. I was back in San Francisco, and she said, I'd like you to sell the piece for me. And I said, well, I'm heading to the East Coast tomorrow for the summer, but I'll pay for your plane ticket if you fly up to San Francisco. I'll meet you at the airport, and I'll have consignment paperwork with me, and I'll take it back east and sell it. And so she hopped on a plane, and we signed the contract, and I sold it for $180,000 to a collector.
Wow, so it really was a happy ending for her. Certainly not for the person who was clearing out his grandfather's estate.
Well, you know, it's interesting because that brings up a lot of emotions, because you think the poor guy, probably some real estate agent said, you know, as soon as you get this house cleaned out, I can get you $500,000 for it. And he probably put $300,000 worth of stuff in the dumpster.
Oh, wow.
But 2 years had transpired, and they probably, you know, it wasn't his house, so there wouldn't have been no way to reach him, really.
Right, right. Okay. Let's take a call from Jenny in Roseburg. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking to Peter Papp about the Antiques Roadshow and rugs. Jenny, go ahead. Jenny in Roseburg. Line is dead. No Jenny there. Jenny, try again if you still have your question about rugs here. But the story that you just related about the fellow who cleared out, I guess it was his grandfather's house.
Yes.
It sounds like a fairly common one. I was reading some other stuff that was online from you about you. But when you talked about that generational shift where a lot of stuff appeared in the 60s and 70s, a lot of stuff also disappeared, it sounds like, in that same time because it went to dumps because people like that guy in San Diego didn't know the value of them.
It is. It's very true, and it's very sad. When I started in the Boston area, once I started out on my own, I talked to a lot of the old-time antiques dealers who used to clean out estates, and they said that they used to stop at the dump and drop off the rugs after they'd cleaned out an entire estate because no one wanted them. What basically happens is that when there's a shift in generations, oftentimes people don't want what their parents have, and they want to have a different look when they're decorating. And so if somebody grew up with dark, heavy design, heavily patterned rugs that were very formal, in the 1950s and 60s, there was this wall-to-wall phase where everything had to be beige and everything had to be neutral, and the rugs were just too heavy and too grandmotherly looking. And so a lot of people, when they inherited their grandmother's estate, the first thing they did was sell or get rid of things. And so a tremendous amount of material came on the market in the 60s and 70s, and a lot of it went to Europe, because in Europe they had four centuries of rug collecting under their belts. They were connoisseurs of rugs, and they recognized how great rugs were. Whereas in the United States, rug collecting was a relatively new thing, and most of the antique rugs that were in the country were a result of just sort of a wealthy explosion of popularity, where it was to decorate in an ostentatious manner was the thing to do in the late 19th and early 20th century. And they weren't really connoisseurs, so they were buying rugs because they were supposed to buy rugs, not because they were connoisseurs of rugs. And so when those rugs went through the families and were passed down, they weren't passed down with the information where the heirs would cherish those objects.
Interesting, because the original owners didn't place that much value, even monetary, on these rugs. It was just something you had to have.
It was just a trapping. I mean, it was just a trapping of wealth, if you think about it that way.
Interesting. But so the value of the rug, though, I mean, it increases because it is in demand. So in some cases, having these things go to the dumps actually, by decreasing the supply, right, raises the price, doesn't it?
Well, certainly, supply and demand, the more it's a dwindling resource, the more valuable the pieces are going to be. But there are also cyclical factors, and we can't assume that every rug is going to be more and more valuable just because time marches on. And there were rugs that were extremely valuable when I was starting in business in the 70s and 80s that are now very hard to sell because taste has changed. And an example of that would be, one of my appraisals, I don't know how many you looked at, but there was an appraisal of a Persian rug called a saruk, and it's a deep navy blue background with a heavily patterned floral design. And these people it was a great story because they had, they were at the estate of their grandparents, and all the siblings were there, and they were deciding who's going to get the table and chairs, who's going to get the couch, who's going to get the paintings. and there was this 9x12 rug, and it was a rainy day, and they had a pickup truck, and they were taking furniture. And the only reason that they took the rug was because they could put it over the furniture to protect the furniture from the rain on the way home.
Wow. I was thinking some of these things probably got used as moving blankets, and it sounds like that's exactly what happened here. We'll come back and talk more with Peter Papp about his work appraising rugs and buying and selling rugs and his work at the Antiques Roadshow when we come back to the Jefferson Exchange with your phone calls and emails in a minute 10. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking today about the Antiques Roadshow on PBS and rugs. And who better to talk about those two subjects than the person who is the rug appraiser on Antiques Roadshow, Peter Papp, who does business on both coasts in America and has been in rugs for nearly 40 years now. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about these topics, 800-838-3760, anywhere in our listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Second chance now for Jenny and Roseburg. Welcome to the Exchange with Peter Papp.
Hi. So I have a rug that I don't believe I got a deal on because I bought it from a London rug dealer, but I bought it because it's just so beautiful, and I didn't get much information on it when I bought it, but I've been searching Google Images, and I believe it's a Bessarabian kilim. I think it's relatively modern, but it's for listeners, it's just to get the idea, it's a hand-woven cream wool about 6x4, and about every 4 inches is just this beautiful flower. There's irises and lily of the valley and bluebells and some little daisy type flowers, and they're just very geometrically placed across the rug, and those are the only designs, and the colors are just very delicate with the flowers, and it's a very beautiful piece of hand weaving, but like I said, there's nothing about it that looks to me like it's antique, but I don't know much. Even Googling, I haven't been able to find out much about that tradition. They're very unusual, and looking at the antique ones, they're just as almost as modern looking as mine.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to know more about this tradition of rug making, because I hadn't seen anything like this before I bought this one, and I still don't know much about them.
All right, well described, Jenny. Thanks for that.
Well, I think if you get the spelling right and Google it, you'll probably find quite a bit on Bessarabian rugs. It's Bessarabian, and these are flat woven rugs. They're done in a tapestry weave, and if anybody knows what a kilim is, they have the same technique as a kilim. It's a flat woven tapestry weave, so the weft is what makes up the design, and when you look at the rug carefully, you can see lots of little slits and openings where one color had to turn back and go the other way. And these were made in Eastern Europe, and they were heavily influenced by European design, but the structure of the rug is much more associated with the kilims that were coming out of Turkey. So it was sort of this blending of two cultures, and they would take the popular floral motifs that you would find in European carpets like Savonnerie and Aubusson, and they would render them in sort of a geometric stylized version so that when you look at the flowers, they almost seem pixelated. And that pixelation is coming from the fact that the nature of the weave made it very hard for them to execute a curving line, so everything looks sort of slightly stepped and geometric. Is that sort of a good assessment of the way the flowers look?
Jenny, still there?
Yes, I am. To some extent, it's but they're actually slightly more naturalistic, but still quite a little bit geometric.
Yeah. Well, it's a tradition that goes back. Certainly, we get 19th century Bessarabians, and it is a tradition that carried through into the mid to late 20th century. So you've probably got one that was made in the 50s or 60s, something like that, because it sounds like the color palette, using the lighter colors. One of the ways that we can date rugs is based on the color palette, and because of the popularity of lighter colors post-World War II, if you see a Bessarabian that has mostly cream colors and lighter shades, it's responding to the Western taste. And this is an important thing to understand when you're assessing rugs, is that beginning in the late 19th and early 20th century, the pieces that were being made in the Middle East were responding to the feedback they were getting from the centers that were purchasing from them. So you'll have shifts in color, you'll have shifts in design. The older Bessarabians tend to have darker colors and have more of a Victorian look. So you can actually date these pieces based on the style.
I understand that some of the more modern rugs are lighter in color because they actually are older rugs, but they were washed or acid washed to tone the colors down.
Well, there is something that's taking place in the industry where dealers are taking antique rugs and they're washing them with hydrochloric acid to remove the color to make them more palatable to the interior design world. And this is a very unfortunate thing that's taking place, and a lot of people who don't know better are buying these pieces and assuming that the very faded look that they have is a result of just natural patination over time. And it's one of the very sad things that's happening, and I'm doing my best to educate the public as to that occurrence, but it's not easy because the majority of the interior design trade for the last 15 years has wanted rugs that were very neutral and wouldn't fight with anything.
Hmm.
So it sort of runs counter to what I'm actually selling.
Let's take another call here. We have Jura in Phoenix. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Peter Papp from the Antiques Roadshow.
Good morning. I was very interested in knowing how I can get an appraisal for a rug. I was in Saudi Arabia during the 80s, and my husband and I just loved rugs. And we bought several, not because of their age so much, because many of them were new. But I bought one, and I understand from what I've read in books that it was probably made in about, well, before 1959, because I think that's when the last king of Afghanistan was on the throne.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. This and if I pronounce this correctly, it's a Zahir Shahi. Does that make sense?
It doesn't ring a bell.
Okay. I'm not pronouncing it correctly, I'm sure. Anyway, this is a gorgeous rug, and it has many borders on it, and we were told that a rug will never be perfect because they think only God can make something perfect, so they'll deliberately put errors in it.
Mm-hmm.
This one has many. Every goal is different than the other one, and even the borders going around there, each little item is different than the one before it or after it.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that it's probably worth some money because when I got it, the rug shop that my husband and I went to quite frequently, the owner was appalled when he found out that one of his employees had sold it to me, and he tried to buy it back.
Mm-hmm.
And when I told him no, I wasn't. I wanted to take it because it's so beautiful. I wanted to bring it home, and he said, "Madame, when you get to America, please do not sell this rug for any less than $10,000." So I know it must be worth quite a bit more, and I know it's not really old. It's what 50 some years old.
All right. So let's get a response here. Thanks for the call, Jura.
Well, to address a few things. First of all, chances are it's a tribal rug. If it has a lot of geometry and a lot of asymmetry like that, and the pieces that were made in Afghanistan were primarily made by different tribes, even though by the 1950s and even by the 1920s, a lot of the tribes were working to sell these rugs, and they were weaving them to be sold as opposed to just for utilitarian purposes. But the hallmark of tribal rugs is that they were more coarsely woven as a rule, and they did have a lot of idiosyncrasies to the design. In terms of the value, generally, 20th century tribal rugs are not going to be terribly valuable because they had transitioned to the use of synthetic dyes. And the people that are serious collectors of tribal rugs want things that are all natural dyes, which limits it to late 19th century and in some cases early 20th century. As far as the shenanigans in the rug store, they had a lot of games that they would play to make somebody feel good about their purchase. And one of the games that they would play would be to pretend that they were upset that something had been sold.
Oh, and, like my boss is so mad I sold this. Yeah,
yeah, and I have to say that I've heard this story so many times that I believe that it's just one of the ways that they would make someone feel very good about their purchase.
All right. Let's take another call. This is Whitney and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Peter Pat from the Antiques Roadshow.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I am Turkish, but I'm now American. My family had rugs, and I have brought here a very big rug that I still am using, and I wonder... It is. How big is this? Big. Probably this is about 10 feet, over 5 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And it has the way that it has been woven. It is at the how shall I say? Around it is flowers all around.
Mm-hmm.
And inside it, because this is a very big, and I'm standing on it, it's very small, continual patterns are in it.
Right.
But the outside is really a flower.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so where did you buy it and when?
I'm Turkish and I lived in Turkey. And the rug came to me. I would suggest 1900.
About 1900. All right. Mm-hmm. Let's see if we can figure something out from that. I bet you never thought you were going to do rug appraisals on the radio, Peter.
Well, I mean, it's interesting. It'd be sort of like trying to describe, a rug to someone who's blind. It's a big challenge. And I think the most important thing that listeners can understand is that. For rugs to be desirable in the marketplace in terms of the antique world, the more generations a rug has passed through, the more likelihood you have something of value. So if you have a rug that you can ascertain was owned by your grandmother or your great-grandmother, there's a reasonably good chance that it's going to be at least early 20th century, if not 19th century. But if you have something that your mother bought 20 years ago, unless she has a receipt that says, she bought it from an establishment that said it was 100 years old, chances are it's going to be something that's more modern. So it's very important. Provenance is a very important factor in establishing the likelihood of value.
Especially if you have family pictures, I'm thinking they can show, hey, look, there's the rug on the floor in the den in 1914.
Absolutely. I mean, one story that I want to make sure I get in before we run out of time is that there was a rug that was sold at Sotheby's in New York this past June, and it was collected in the early 20th century by a senator from Wyoming who fancied himself a rug collector. And in the early 20th century, there was sort of a surge of interest in rugs, and there were some very important people who were collecting and donating to museums. And this senator... decked out his Fifth Avenue apartment with all of these rugs in the early 20th century, but then he ultimately left them to the Corcoran Museum in Washington. And recently the Corcoran Museum decided to deaccession the rugs and focus on other things. And this one particular rug was woven in the late 16th century, and it was only about 5x8, but it had been published in rug literature since the 1930s. And Sotheby's estimated the rug to bring $5 to $7 million. And I convinced my client, who has a very important collection and he lends a lot of things to museums and so forth, that this is probably one of the most important rugs that will ever come on the market in the United States. And I said, I think it's worth $15 to $25 million. Now, this is probably a rug that was sold for $10,000 back in the 1920s.
Mm-hmm.
And I bid on the rug, and I bid all the way up to $29 million and didn't get it. And it went to a Middle Eastern museum. So the provenance played a major role in this rug's value because it was known since the early 20th century. It was published in books, and it had been in a museum. So anytime you can have provenance, it's going to lend credibility to whatever you have.
If a rug looks like it's certainly been through the years, looks a little ratty, but still has a great story and a great origin, I mean, is it still worth something, or is the condition of it very critical to the overall value?
Condition is a factor, but the more rare a rug is, the more tolerant we are of condition issues, even to the point where there are fragments of rugs that bring a tremendous amount of money because there are not any complete examples. So you shouldn't immediately discount something just because it has a hole in it or it has a worn spot. Rugs that are made in the 20th century, and if they have condition problems, it is going to be a seriously limiting factor to value. But on 19th century rugs, there are excellent restoration sources available, and a lot of these rugs can be beautifully restored.
We have learned so much today, and I know there are a few more people who would like to get questions in. We have no time for those. I apologize to those people, but I wanted Peter Papp to get a full head of steam here to talk about not only rugs themselves, but also the process of appraising them on the Antiques Roadshow. Thanks so much for joining us today on The Exchange, Peter Papp.
Well, I've been really enjoying it, and I'm glad I was able to help with some education.
All right, take care. And that will do it for today's Jefferson Exchange. We will not be live the rest of the week. We'll be recorded as we present programs for Christmas and the day after and on the 27th as well. But rest assured that from Charlotte Dern and Reed Newland and myself at the Jefferson Exchange, all of us at JPR wish you a very Merry Christmas and a very continued happy holiday season.